702. 702. On 92.7.
And 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
It's 8 minutes after 6 o'clock then on this Friday evening. We get to round up the week then on The Money Show with me, Arabile Kumete. Of course, in for Bruce Whitfield. The show is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives your business access to a corridor of possibilities. That's African Asity. Absa is a registered FSP. Of course, it's a shortened one today. So we'll get to chat about the pace of economic reform in South Africa very quickly in a bit. With Peter Todman-Talton, just whether we're able to fix things as they currently stand and where to from here. It seems to get a little more rough and a little more difficult from here on. So the hard grafting and the hard work needs to be done now as well. Of course, we get into the markets as well. A much better day for the JSE, going up nearly 0.2% there. So a good day on that front. And then we get into the best bits of The Money Show for this week. Of course, if you've missed some of it, you of course don't forget to catch the podcasts as well on the 702 website and Cape Talk website, of course. And you can also catch our brutal biz quiz. Of course, it's Friday. So we'll get into all of that.
702
for the curious
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
So the question becomes whether we've done enough to try and change the course of South Africa's economic future. Many would say, no, we haven't. President Cyril Ramaphosa was aimed at being the president that would perhaps bring some economic grace of some sort, perhaps help an economy that really was in need of somebody who understands the world of business, the world of markets, perhaps a little bit more. Not necessarily saying that no other president has, but being in business and having made his fortune from it, one would have hoped that perhaps we'd be able to get there. Unfortunately, the economic reforms have not, for now anyway, seemingly come into place. So where to from here? Are we moving fast enough? Are we going to be able to be to actually get things done? Or is it just a case of be patient? Peter Todman-Talton, head of capital markets research at Intellidex, joining us then on the line. Thank you so much for the time, Peter. Do we get anywhere with this kind of growth? Yeah. I mean, the World Bank has already downgraded us to 0.9% for 2020.
So it's a really tough question. There is reform happening. I think we have to remember that. There have been changes to the rules around child tourist immigration. There's been other changes through last year, obviously, the ESCOM roadmap IRP published. But the point is that all of this is not coming together fast enough in a cohesive whole to really shift the cost of doing business, the risk-reward balance of doing business in South Africa. And as a result, we are left with pretty bad growth, and the dominant story is load shedding. And hence, we've also revised down our growth forecast today for 2020 now to 0.6 from 1.1% previously.
Yeah, so it doesn't really bode well, though, unfortunately. And as you say, those reforms are in place, but they're seemingly not going to do enough for us to beat the bucket by the seams of things. We're only just beating a technical recession every time, but it's bound to just be a continued recession for a consistent period. Is it a case of we just need to be patient here? Are you seeing the government actually going in the right direction?
Well, I think the problem is the economy is, and the reform is notionally going in the right direction, but so exceptionally slowly. So sure, you can be patient, but it just means year after year of negative per capita income growth. We've shifted out the view when the economy will reach back to zero per capita income growth from mid-2022 into 2023 now. And that really then shows up, obviously, unemployment in fiscal policy. So sure, you can be patient, but there are costs of being patient. Unemployment and poor fiscal outturns being the two main things.
Yeah, and I suppose then with risks like load shedding, it doesn't get any easier. So which is the item, if you were to pick one, which would you deal with first? Let's just say you aren't able to deal with everything. What's the first one in your books?
Well, it has to be energy security. I mean, a country not having electricity relegates you into a very unfortunate set of peer groups around investor fears of how an economy functions and what goes on in the economy. And it's a signaling thing, but it's also, of course, the impact on doing business. And on the ability of simply people to produce. And that's really the thing that has to happen fastest. And it's quite easy, and that's, I think, the frustration for business here. Liberalizing embedded generation, putting solar power on people's roofs, allowing mining companies to invest in solar power is an incredibly fast and easy way to get a huge amount of capacity on stream, but it's not happening for various political reasons.
I'm going to ask you let's call it a trick question. Would you still call South Africa an emerging market?
That's certainly what investors call South Africa. I mean, there are frontier markets, of course, where there isn't generally rule of law to such a greater degree as South Africa. And I think that's why South Africa still is an emerging market. It has the rule of law. Your question sort of poses an interesting categorization problem for investors. And generally, emerging markets have fast growth. They have investment occurring. They have reforms occurring. And that's not happening.
Yeah, and that's exactly my fear right now. So clearly then, with all of that in mind, as you would say, we're not moving fast enough to actually move the country forward. So what do you expect then from State of the Nation, or what would you like to see coming out of the State of the Nation address, and then obviously from the Finance Minister when budget comes in February?
Well, very little. I think we've learned from last year's SONA, there's two SONAs last year indeed, that there is a huge amount of spin. There are some positive announcements that, you know, do allow the economy to hold its head just above water in terms of real growth being above zero. We've seen some focus, for instance, in SONAs in recent years on the World Bank Doing Business Index, which is a positive thing. But I think the ultimate problem is far more technical and boring, if you like. It's the functioning of the state, the way the presidency works with the state, the capacity of the state. These are all very boring things for a SONA, but they're really what needs to change to get the dial moving.
So do you see a downgrade then in March from Moody's in particular?
That's the baseline at the moment. I mean, the Moody's is a complicated beast. It's given a huge amount of benefit of the doubt for a long time. But I think the fiscal hole will widen. The pace of or the solid evidence around tackling the public sector wage will won't be there for them. And so, yes, at the moment, the baseline is a downgrade on the 27th of March.
What happens from there? Surely it goes from bad to worse.
Not necessarily. I mean, we have to, and that's a problem. I think we have to remember this is priced in by the markets to some degree, as we expected since sort of the end of 2017. I think you see the currency weaken somewhat, but not a huge amount. You see interest rates go up somewhat, but not a huge amount. And it basically compounds the problems the economy is in by raising the cost of credit into the economy is the main fear that we have around the downgrade.
Your growth figure then for South Africa for 2020?
We're at 0.6, down from 1.1. I think other banks have been cutting down to that sort of level. You said the World Bank is cutting as well. The IMF, when they come out at the end of this month, I think will cut as well. So, yeah, I think everyone is sort of converging back towards where we were last year.
Sure. 0.6 is definitely not enough to get an economy that is meant to be an emerging market through the worst time that it possibly has had in its democratic history. Peter Todd-Montalto, though, appreciate your time. Thank you. Head of Capital Markets Research at Intellidex, joining us there as we chat about the economic pace of reform in South Africa and whether it'll help us move the country forward in any particular way, perhaps at any pace at all. That is the difficulty right now. That is what South Africa needs. And as I've continuously said time and time again, we need action now.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
So a much better day on South Africa's markets at 20 past 6, having taken a look at how things have fared for the remainder of the week, or for most of the week. A bit of nervous trading to begin with, of course, with Iran and the United States, having had that tense standoff out particularly in Iraq then as well. So that just means that things have now de-escalated somewhat. So you're seeing that even the local exchange managing to get some gains today, record highs across the global spectrum as well. So what does that all mean? Tato Mashego is the portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, and he joins us then as well. Tato, it's been an absolutely crazy week. Where does one even start? Surely at some point you thought, oh boy, we're headed for the worst here.
Indeed. Good evening. There's never a dull moment these days in financial markets. And of course, as you know, geopolitics obviously intersects with the markets on a continuous basis. And the threat of a new war, potentially between the US and Iran, obviously started the week off quite poorly. We saw oil almost reaching $70 per barrel. Yeah. And it could have gone significantly higher. Of course, Iran controls the Strait of Hormuz, which a significant chunk of the world's oil passes through. And that would be a nuclear option, obviously, if things did escalate. But fortunately, it seems that some sense of sanity has resumed.
Sure. I'm so glad that it actually has, because things, as you said, could have gotten worse for wear. Here's a company, though, that is going from bad to worse. MTN, they've had their struggles of late, haven't they? Mm-hmm.
Indeed. It's been a very tough time for MTN recently and for the telco sector in whole. Obviously, moving towards data away from voice, lower margin business, having to spend significant amount of capex to do that switch obviously impacts the whole industry. And then obviously issues around data pricing in SA and previously the fine in Nigeria. But we do get news today that the Attorney General in Nigeria has removed the $2 billion fine or letter of demand, rather, that it issued to MTN and has sort of relegated the matter to the tax authorities. So whatever fine does materialize will be significantly less. That's obviously a benefit for MTN, and we saw the share price rally on the back of that.
Yeah. Does that still give investors sort of confidence in the business? And I only say that because the sum of the parts are great for MTN, but it just keeps getting into this litigation and these legalities, particularly in Nigeria, that aren't helping.
Well, of course, when you invest in emerging markets and in some cases frontier markets, there's always risk and reward. And lately we've seen quite a bit of the risk and not enough of the reward. Yeah. But Nigeria, of course, after the oil prices fell about 2 or 3 years ago, and the budget, obviously, export earnings, a large portion of it comes from oil. They had to start scrambling around and looking for foreign currency. And one of the ways of doing that was taxing foreign companies. Mm. And hence, we got this $2 billion fine on alleged back payments of taxes. But then, of course, Iran, another place where MTN is invested. And I don't think that needs further explanation. Yeah.
That almost went sideways for them as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, here's a deal that I've also been following quite significantly, Just Eat. Mm-hmm. Now, that UK business, if I'm correct, pretty much isn't anything backbreaking. Isn't that amazing a business? And yet they keep on trying to find as much as possible for it. Mm-hmm. Process, however, which is the Naspers split off, not necessarily getting their way on this one, though.
Yeah, food delivery seems to be the new vector for growth in terms of O2O or online to offline and technology or consumer internet technology sectors. So what you had was rival bids for Just Eat, which is a UK food delivery business, from Takeaway, which is the Dutch firm, and Prosus, as you mentioned. And it seems like Prosus is losing out. Yesterday, there was a special meeting of Takeaway shareholders to approve the acquisition of Just Eat. And previously last month, we had Just Eat's board recommending Just Eat's offer over Prosus. The difference with the two offers, Just Eat offering all scrip and a merger between the two businesses. So, that's Takeaway offering all scrip. So yeah. Just Eat's shareholders could continue to participate, whereas Prosus wanted to buy them out for cash at a lower offer. Around 800 pence per share. So obviously, it depends on whether the Just Eat shareholders want to continue having exposure to food delivery or take the money and run via Prosus.
Yeah, it just feels to me that it's not necessarily the biggest growth area when you consider that the world is almost flooding itself in many ways with food delivery services. And you know, how many more can you really take on? That becomes my question.
Yeah, it's pretty much a scramble for market share. And at this stage, it's who has the deepest pockets and who has a reach in different markets. And so you end up having to pay over the odds for businesses which may only become profitable in the medium to long term. And so we saw a positive reaction from Prosus on the day because shareholders feel that perhaps they were going to overpay for this asset and now they may have to look elsewhere.
Okay, well, we'll see how things fare from them, because they'll probably go on the acquisitive front again once more at some stage.
Most likely.
On the local front, DRD Gold, now 50.1% owned, and that is by Sibanye-Stillwater, a company that has been very diversified in terms of where they're purchasing. A good move, you reckon?
So it seems like Sibanye has exercised its option to increase its stake in DRD Gold from 38% to just over 50%. So giving it control, allowing it to consolidate the business. DRD obviously focuses on tailings and surface mining, really. So it can be a high margin business when done correctly. I think their last operational update, they stated that production increased about 30%. So for the 6 months, so they produce around 3,000 kilograms of gold during that period. So they've shown that they're able to operate these new mines, which they're working on. And from a Sibanye perspective, it gives them more exposure to surface mining, and it adds their overall production capacity. So from their perspective, it seems like a positive move.
What do you think of the Sibanye-Stillwater business front, you know, on the whole? When they got into Stillwater, it seemed okay. They're going for the jugular here.
Yeah.
It kind of hasn't necessarily materialized, or, well, I thought anyway, the way it they'd probably planned.
Well, it seems their timing was rather fortuitous, or I suppose you could say it was well planned by management in terms of them exiting some of the local assets and moving into Stillwater. Obviously, we've seen palladium prices over the past year, pretty much double. And so that's obviously been a major benefit for platinum and palladium producers. So Sibanye has benefited significantly from that. So the acquisitions they made over the past 3 years and the shifting geographically and out of high cost curve mines into lower cost curve positions has definitely helped them.
All right, let's quickly chat about the currency. That one will always be of great question. A lot of factors can obviously affect it, but we've gotten a de-escalation slightly with regards to Iran and the United States. I say slightly, it's probably a little bit more than that. And you have the China-US trade deal, part one of that being signed next week as well. And if that does happen, surely there are a little more legs with regards to the currency going back below 14 Rand, or am I just being optimistic?
Well, it's always good to be optimistic. of course, the more optimistic people are, then generally the better the market tends to trend, at least in the short term. And it's more than a possibility. Obviously, the Rand acts as a risk-on, risk-off metric, being the most liquid emerging market currency. And as you've mentioned, this week has ended on a high with de-escalations with the US and Iran.
Yeah.
Phase one of the trade deal supposedly going to be signed in the next few days. And so people seem to be more confident. And so next week the Rand could, or let me rather not
speculate.
Let me rather not speculate. it's within the realm of possibility in the next few weeks for the Rand to move below 14. But we really shouldn't be forecasting where the Rand is going to go. And nobody has any special insight to say exactly where the Rand is going to go.
It becomes a difficult one to trade, especially in the geopolitical world we live in, right?
Yeah,
certainly a tough one. Well, Thato, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Happy Friday to you. And continue to have a wonderful year as well. Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, Thato Mashego, they're joining us in studio for that market update.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives your business access to a corridor of possibilities. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Well, this is Arabile Kumete in for Bruce Whitfield, and on your next Money Show, I will have sports anchor Mutsidisi Mohono in for our Make Money Mondays feature to find out about her values and relationship with money. Investment manager Joseph Busha will pick our three stocks of the week, and our weekly business book will be a review of Skin in the Game by Nassim Taleb. Dean Carlson, CEO of Brain Farm, will be in for that one. All this and more on your next Money Show.
702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
All right, so around 20 minutes then to the top of the hour, we get into the best bits of the week, of course, and just what had happened this week as well then. And on Wednesday, U.S. President Donald Trump had made a television statement on the situation and tension in Iran. That was quite an interesting one. That was the day we got the de-escalation. This happened during the show, and Sasfin stockbroker David Shapiro did a first take on how markets received his response.
Look, he's standing down, and I think right at the end, his final statement was that he actually put out an olive branch and said, you know, if you want peace, we'll sit down and sign peace, but obviously under the conditions that we want, you know, that you start behaving yourself. He also, he also suggested that NATO become more involved, but I think he didn't suggest that there was going to be any more action against him other than sanctions and so on. But I think the market's responding very, very positively to it. And it does push down this whole, you know, this whole episode. And I think that from now on, I think markets will start to pick up from where we are. So good sign. I think even the U.S. markets could be reaching new highs as we talk, or certainly by the end of the session. So a lot more tame than we expected.
All right. Well, that was David Shapiro, of course, then from Sasfin. Also this week, let's remember, we had the matric results, and they were released this week. So Anish Desani, the CEO of online recruiting service Giraffe, talked about opportunities for those with or without a matric certificate. In this bit, he shares some inside information on the type of jobs available for those without matric.
Look, I mean, if you haven't got a matric certificate, then it pretty much exclusively rules you out from working for a corporate. And like I say, 60% of people work for corporates. And so what that means is you're closing the door to the majority of jobs. So it is very, very difficult if you don't have a matric. However, we're seeing lots of jobs that are in high demand, which don't necessarily require a matric. And I'll give you an example. So small businesses are less fussy than corporates. They're a bit more flexible in terms of, you know, the matric policy. So if you don't have a matric, then applying for a small business is something which is an option. Then also there are other things, other roles which aren't really kind of academic, you know, things like drivers, especially motorcycle drivers, truck drivers. These are very, very in a very high demand. And of course, it requires you to get a different kind of driver's license. But I think if you wanted to, you know, if you get a truck driver's license, then, you know, there's a very, very good job prospect. Also artisans, welders, boilermakers, and mechanics, huge demand for these. They're skilled roles, but they're more vocational types of things. And then, of course, things like hair and beauty. We're seeing a big demand for things like hairdressers, nail technicians, as you're seeing kind of retail outlets that providing hair and beauty grooming services. We're seeing a big demand there. So it's not, you know, if you don't have a matric, I guess don't stress too much, but be aware of what the kinds of jobs that you can do are. Don't be kind of idealistic.
And don't close yourself off from different and varying opportunities. Anything can happen. You could do almost anything. So please, 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 I really hope that this week has been one where matriculants have allowed themselves to learn, to grow from it and take on the opportunities, pass or no pass. It really does mean that there is so much more for you out there. Just keep on trusting and keep fighting hard for the spot you really want in South Africa. Speaking of finding spots that you want, our shapeshifter of the week was Hale Matsepa, the CEO and co-founder of Clios Capital. Now, he spoke about why they invested in the health group Real Foods that actually owns the Kauai Group.
There we bought into a health, wellness, food play. You just need to look at the amount of runners in the morning. I'm a runner myself, so I see it almost on a daily basis. You know, you wake up at 5, there's a lot of people on the road. There's a lot of cyclists on the road. You go to Virgin Active. It's quite busy. So people are conscientizing themselves around health. And that's the thesis we bought into, and we haven't been disappointed. And I think it's proven itself as a sound investment by the recognition at the SAFCO Awards last year. I mean, we've now opened up some stores outside of SA. We opened up a store in Thailand. We've opened up a store in Holland, in the Netherlands, and we're hoping to roll out more. So it's a global theme that we're playing into, and it's been well received by the consumer. I mean, it's major brands, Real Food. One of its major brands is the Kauai outfit, which is the one that we're rolling out quite aggressively overseas.
Sure. In getting people to trust the brand as well, I mean, you've had to sort of reposition it, jig it around, sort of turn it around as well,
because yeah.
it wasn't necessarily doing that great for some time. And how has that sort of process sort of worked out for you?
Well, when we came in, it was already halfway there. Dean and the current shareholders at the time had already started the process. They yeah. needed additional capital to develop it further and for some other acquisitions. But I mean, that management team is fantastic. It's a kind of management team that we want to invest alongside with and partner with. You know, they understand transformation, the amount of jobs that have been created at Real Foods within the Kauai stable by the mere rollout, you know, is huge. It's quite significant. And now.
All right. Of course, that was our shapeshifter of the week, Hale Matsepa, the CEO and co-founder at Clios Capital. They invested in quite well. They're going into the Kauai Group. They are looking for a new set of funds there as an investment firm. All right. So personal finance expert Warren Ingram is also back. He looked at what your money checklist for 2020 should be. This is him talking about New Year's resolutions and behavioral patterns.
And let me give you my best example is let's look at gyms in South Africa.
Oh, boy.
Probably around the world.
Worst time to go to right now.
Yeah. And I mean, so I'm fanatical. I mean, I run kind of 3 times a week. I'm in the gym straight after it 3 times a week, and I've been doing it for 15 years.
Sure.
And so for the first 5 or so years, I was probably because it's early in the morning, I wasn't really awake and I didn't really notice patterns. But what I've realized over the years is that now, so from this week coming up, I think pretty much next Monday, for about 6 weeks, the gym's packed.
Yeah.
And then you notice it starts to get emptier and emptier and emptier. And eventually there'll be a few faces that were new at the start of the year that are still there and they stick it out. They're the ones that become committed to whatever it was that they decided they want to do from a fitness point of view.
Yeah.
And the gym gets to kind of a new normal. Some people drop off and so they go. And then amazingly, it picks up again. And it picks up somewhere around the beginning of spring. Because then all of a sudden, you know, people kind of get out of the winter mode and they say,
the summer body.
Yeah, I've got to get my summer body. And, you know, they stop making excuses about it. It was really cold in winter and it was dark and I don't want to get up. So then human behavior kicks in again and we get a few more that come back in.
Yeah.
Every single year, year after year, this pattern repeats itself. And I think it's the same with money. I think what happens is we get too busy, and then at the end of the year, we have a bit of time to reflect and to look back and say, oh, hang on, you know, actually it was quite a lot of stuff that I didn't do. Some of it's around money. I didn't save as much as I should have.
Yeah.
I'm worried about the economy. I'm worried about the, you know, the whole economic climate and the job climate, et cetera, et cetera. Let me take action. But that action is not, I mean, it might not be difficult from an understanding or knowledge point of view, but it is going to be difficult from a human behavior point of view because it requires new behaviors. It requires us to reprogram sometimes the way we live. Sometimes it's our brain about, you know, like giving up on certain things which we need to do. And we don't like doing that. That's hard. So what happens is 6 weeks into the new year, as you're saying, by March maybe, kind of people are saying, you know, I've got new excuses for why I can't carry on or whatever it is. I've got busy or whatever, and so they go. But a few people do. And a few people stick to their patterns and their new behaviors. And what's interesting is, you know, I think we chatted about it before in the past. 5 out of every 100 employed South Africans are able to retire.
Yeah.
With enough money.
Yeah, 100%.
And so probably the same proportion of our population can run Comrades Marathon.
All right. So that was personal finance expert there, Warren Ingram, talking about your 2020 checklist. I don't know if Comrades Marathon becomes one of them, but nonetheless, if you are going to do that, hope you're ready. Also, then we had our small business focus, and that was with Alon Reyes, who's, of course, our small business expert there. He's the founder and CEO of Reyes Corp. He shared 6 business concepts that he wish was banned in 2020. This was number one.
My hope for what's banned in 2020 is the words business plan. You know,
I thought that was the mainstay of like corporate jargon, just like always have a business plan.
Yes. And when you look at the research around business plans, you'll see that there is absolutely no correlation between a business plan and business success. In fact, I've got 3 wonderful pieces of research that show that there is a negative correlation between business plans and business success. But The thing for me is the focus, and particularly the financial institutions, to focus on the capability of this entrepreneur that we're talking about, the team. To me, it's their ability to adapt when they reach obstacles. It's their ability to see opportunity that's way more important than this business plan, which in South Africa is very often actually written by a third party who doesn't even understand the business, and then it's presented to a bank manager or credit committee who have never met the entrepreneur. The system is broken. To me, back entrepreneurs, back entrepreneurial teams, not this document called a business.
Stop backing the business plan. That's the words then from Alan Reyes, the founder and CEO of Reyes Corp. Those were the best bits of the Money Show this week. Of course, it is Friday, so we do have the brutal biz quiz, and we'll kick things off now before we get into our traffic, of course. And question number one is, the former CEO of which company was reportedly transported out of Japan in a box designed for transporting musical instrument? Talk about playing musical chairs. We'll get to that brutal biz quiz. You can, of course, call in on 021-446-0567 if you're in Cape Town. In Joburg, it's 011-883-0702.
The Money Show.
The brutal biz quiz.
It is Friday, so of course we do get into that brutal biz quiz to close off the show. The former CEO of which company was reportedly transported out of Japan in a box designed for transporting musical instrument? That's question number one. Zerk seems to think he has the correct answer. Zerk, what do you say?
The CEO of Nissan.
That's 100%. Yep, correct. Former Nissan CEO Carlos Ghosn, of course, fleeing to Lebanon from Japan, where he faced trial on financial misconduct charges. What is the answer to the next one then, Zerk? Which chemical element has the symbol PD and an atomic number of 46?
No idea.
Really? We spoke about it yesterday. Okay, let's try and get somebody else on the line and hopefully get them to give us the correct answer here. Smusiso, do you know which chemical element has the symbol PD and an atomic number of 46? Not there? All right, well, we'll continue to ask the question. Zerk, unable to continue to ask this one. We spoke about it just yesterday, so clearly, it's about the price range. There's a particular metal that is, of course, easily accessible, I suppose, in this one. I'll even give a clue. It kind of helps with catalytic converters in vehicles. So we'll wait to see who can answer that one. Musafir, you have an answer for us by any chance? No, it doesn't look like we have Musafir on the line there. We'll try and get him now, though. Musafir, you say you might have a line, an answer with regards to which chemical element has the symbol PD and an atomic number 46?
H2O.
No, definitely not, unfortunately. H2O symbol is actually H2O, so that's not the right one. Simpiwe, do you have the correct answer for this one?
Yeah, it's palladium.
That's 100%. Of course, yesterday I spoke to mining analyst Peter Mage about this fascinating resource and just how hard the price has run thus far. $2,090 a fine ounce, the most expensive commodity out there at present. Who is the world's richest person according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index then, Simpiwe?
Okay, it's...
No, he's actually not number one. Oh, I can't, unfortunately. I'm going to have to give it on to someone else now. So I'll ask the question again. Who is the world's richest person according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index? No, it is not Bill Gates, as Simpiwe has just answered. We hopefully will get another answer in just a bit. And we'll try and see where exactly we can go to with this one. Perhaps give you a few guesses with this one. Anzra, though, you are on the line. Do you have an answer for us, the richest person?
Mr. George Bezos.
Oh, so close. So George Bezos is actually somebody else entirely, but it's Jeff Bezos. So we'll just give it to you for that reason. So the wealth of Bezos is now estimated at $117 billion. So we'll give you that one for now. Okay, so let's ask you this then, Anzra. After Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, and then Bernard Arnold, who is the fourth richest person in the world? Any guess? Any guess? In the United States, lots of money, investment company. No? Nothing?
No.
Oh, unfortunate. Sorry there, Anzra. All right, so we don't have a winner on that one. After Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, and Bernard Arnold, who is the fourth richest person in the world? Hopefully we can get an answer for this one. Surely it's a little bit easy. At some point, he actually occupied the number one spot. He had tried to invest in probably one of the biggest banks in the world. That's Wells Fargo. He almost wanted to get into a 10% holding of Wells Fargo not so long ago. The world trusts him pretty much for his investment advice. Ismail, who am I talking about?
I think it's Warren Buffett.
100%. There we go. Obviously, the chairman of Berkshire Hathaway. His personal wealth is now estimated at $89.1 billion there as well. Okay, so I'm going to ask you then, Ismail, hopefully you can take us all the way. What is the money called which is paid annually to the British monarch by the government in order to fund the monarch's official duties? What is the money called which is paid annually to the British monarch by the government in order to fund the monarch's official duties? Let's just give you the last word. It's a grant of some sort. What kind of grant would it be?
The royal grant.
Oh, no, unfortunately, it's not the royal grant. And hopefully we can get a quick answer in this one as well. Time running out on this brutal quiz, isn't it, unfortunately? So we've given you the last word of this of the money, which is paid annually to the British monarch by the government in order to fund the monarch's official duties. The answer to that one is actually a sovereign grant. That is actually what it is. Of course, the monarch there, a couple announcing on Wednesday that they will leave their senior roles in the British royal family to become financially independent. Very quickly to close off, which business leader stunned this week after he tore off his blazer and danced and bopped around for about 40 seconds in front of a large crowd in China? That one is Elon Musk. He was in China this week to mark the first deliveries of the Shanghai model made Model 3 vehicle. That closes out the money show for the week then, of course. I'll be back again on Monday, of course, to give you more of the money show and its bits. Please do stay tuned. It is 7 o'clock, though, and this is your Eyewitness News.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives your business access to a corridor of possibilities. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.